welcome to Small Spark Theory. This podcast is designed as a collection of thoughts, ideas, and practical tips on using marginal gains to help your agency new business endeavors. Small Spark Theory is created and hosted by me, Lucy Mann of Gunpowder Consulting. Hello and welcome back to Small Spark Theory. I hope you're all well. We're recording this. It's the last week of August and I don't know about you, but it feels a bit like somebody has activated the autumn switch. And yeah, I've got that real back to school feeling. But I wanted to talk this month about the subject of podcasts. Now, I've noticed during lockdown that there have been a number of new agency podcasts popping up I've seen on LinkedIn, and I thought it was a good opportunity to think about podcasts, because obviously while this is a podcast, it's something as a channel and as a marketing tactic that we haven't actually covered in the series so far. So what better time than now? And actually, what better guest for me to interview than our very own editor and producer, Isabel Jarvis. Izzy, welcome to the airwaves.
Well, hi, Lucy. How are you doing?
Really well. I'm really well. Although I must admit, I miss our recording sessions in the pod.
Oh, I know. It'll happen again soon.
It will. It will. But in the meantime, we have been busy recording remotely. And for those listeners that don't already know, Izzy has been producing and editing this podcast since we started at the end of 2016, which is when we started planning this. And I think we did the first episode in January of 2017.
So we did.
We're coming up for 4 years. It feels like a really good time to be talking about podcasts, I think, because I don't know about you, Izzy, I've seen quite a few new agency podcasts come up.
Definitely.
During lockdown. And I think obviously people have got a bit more time on their hands, which is good that they're, you know, creating more content.
So I've been thinking about podcasts as well, but I just sort of wonder why you think agencies should do podcasts.
Yeah, good question. And I have to say, I don't think it's right for everybody. And I think this is what tends to be a challenge with agency marketing overall, is that we can get quite distracted and obsess a little bit about the tactics rather than thinking about the strategy. Essentially, a podcast is a really good channel. It's a really good channel. And if it works really well, if essentially it can turn into an interesting marketing asset. But certainly to start with, it's very much a channel. So my advice would be that any agency that's thinking about using a podcast as part of their kind of new business and marketing toolkit, to really think first about what actually is their message and what is the content that and therefore who is their audience. And it should form part of a bigger content strategy. So if I think back, Izzy, to when we started doing this, actually didn't start this conversation thinking that we were going to start a podcast. We started the conversation and not actually really thinking about marketing. We were talking about marginal gains. We were talking about my obsession with the Olympics and athletes using this kind of marginal gains philosophy. And we were starting to think about, actually, it felt something that we were really interested in and we wanted to explore, and we wanted to explore it with other people.
It was. And then eventually the plan was to create a book.
It was. So it started thinking, actually, this is a series of blogs. Then we thought, actually, that we might be able to have enough content to be able to produce a book. And it was that point that you said to me, actually, hang on a minute, why don't we do a podcast? And I think I said, what's a podcast?
I think you knew.
Although, as I've often said since, at that point, my experience of podcasting was Serial and The Archers.
The Archers, yes.
There's two extremes right there. But I think so it very much it was a content and idea first strategy, and the podcasts simply as a channel simply came very much as an afterthought and as actually, you know, how can this content live? How can people best consume it. I think the other thing that's worth thinking about actually is that we had a really clear idea about who our audience is.
Mm-hmm.
It's a niche audience, but it's an easily defined audience. It's those that are doing new business in agencies or those that own agencies and are running agencies. And if anybody else is listening to it, then really I'm quite not sure why. but yes, I think having a really clear idea about the audience is really important. So
absolutely.
If an agency is part of their content marketing strategy, has a really clear idea for their content, they've got some really interesting thoughts that they want to expand on, that they want to turn into a wider conversation, and potentially they're taking that thinking through to all the other parts of their marketing, you know, whether it's events or whether it's, you know, across their social media, all those kind of things, then I think it can really work. But I think what it's not is a kind of an add-on sticking plaster.
No. Not at all. I think once you've got that content idea, the rest is easy.
Yeah. So if there's an agency that's listening to this and they're thinking, okay, well, actually, we've got a really strong point of difference, and actually we've got a real theme and a real idea and a conversation that we want to be having, and we've got a really clearly defined audience. I can remember one of the first things that you said to me right at the beginning was you were quite adamant that we needed to have a structure. And I really resisted that because I just thought, I'm just going to interview people and it'll be fine. We'll just chat. You were right. we really needed a structure. But can you, so I realise that now, I understand why that's important, but I wonder whether you can just explain a bit about why that was so important.
Well, I mean, to be fair, this was the first podcast I've ever worked on as well, so it was a bit of trial and error. But in my mind, I just knew from kind of previous experience in other areas that just having, from a practical point of view, I wanted to make sure that we were like being efficient with your time and also the guests' time as well. I just wanted to make sure that we kind of covered everything that we needed to, that we wanted to get from it. I think if you've got like a loose framework, the host and in general, the interview can kind of go in any direction. So like, it doesn't have to be like a very strict framework at all. Absolutely. It doesn't have to be watertight. It just sort of allows you to be more creative with the content. So basically, back to your point, the content is there and you can follow this loose framework, you can kind of do what you want, really. And also the other side of it is that guests and listeners know what to expect.
Yeah.
As well, which makes them want to come back, hopefully.
Yeah, I think you're right. And I think certainly being able to let guests know what at least the loose structure is beforehand,
yeah,
is helpful, because I guess that it puts them at ease if it isn't something that they've done before.
Just gets the best out of them as well.
And how do you feel about formats? Because I know, you know, we started with a clear strategy that it was going to be an interview format, a kind of a one-on-one interview format. We've deviated from that just a few times when we did the live event, which was a panel, and we've done a couple of recap episodes. And we've generally kept to around half an hour, sometimes 45 mm-hmm. minutes. On average,
I would say it very much depends on what the content is. So I've worked on a few different podcasts. Some are similar sort of length, some are over an hour, and some are even just 5 minute kind of short, sharp kind of little episodes that you can just quickly download and listen to. But I would say for every single podcast I work on, I really like a simple format. So a simple framework that, again, just allows you to be as creative as possible with the content itself. So I always give this as a reference, but Desert Island Discs, I think, is like the perfect format in that you have the same questions every time, but every single episode is completely different. And it just makes it really special. I've also been listening to one recently called Off Menu, which is like a comedy and food podcast as well. with Ed Gamble and James Acaster, and they basically just ask their guest what their dream menu would be. And again, it's the same questions, but it's fascinating because every answer is so different from each person. I just think that's wonderful. But saying that, I must admit, and I would love to do another live episode of Small Spark Theory again. I just think you get a different aspect from that as well. It's wonderful. I tell you what the live one is really good for. The live episodes are so good for rankings in iTunes. So that's something that I would highly recommend. Once we're allowed to all be in a room together, I think we should definitely do another live one, Lucy.
No, that's a really good point, actually. And I'd forgotten about that because when we did the live event, lots of people were talking about it on social media. And therefore, we had a spike on social media, which meant we had a spike on iTunes. And that then meant that we bumped up into the chart and then everything. Then you get a bit, so it's a kind of virtuous circle, isn't it? You then get a kind of a boost in downloads as well.
But I would say in terms of length, I think it's really interesting the way that we listen to podcasts is just developing so fast now that it's available on any kind of assistant or, you know, any on Google search as well. Google has now kind of made individual podcast episodes available in search results. So if kind of someone is asking about a topic on Google or an interview with a specific person, Google will now index in the same way that they do with websites and content, like possible episodes of a podcast that fit the query. And you can now also listen through, you know, Echo or Home, Google Home, whatever. It makes it a lot more accessible and just opens it up to such a broad audience that haven't actually necessarily listened to podcasts at all. So, and that's developing so quickly as well. It's just incredible.
Crikey, that slightly fries my brain, is it? That's why you're our producer. So that you can tell me about those kind of things and make it happen and I don't have to think about it. I think also, just going back to the format, the interview format, I can remember when we were starting and thinking about interviewing people, one of the things that you said was that it's better to try not to have more than two voices.
Yeah.
Or to keep an eye on the number of voices that you have. And I thought about that several times since then. And I think it's particularly interesting because certainly during lockdown, there's been lots of agency marketing activity to kind of engage audiences that has been around webinars. And webinars are brilliant because you can have a panel discussion, you've got an audience, and you can have lots of different people interjecting and Q&A, and it's really interactive and it's really, really good. And we need to do an episode talking about webinars, but it's a great thing to do. And, you know, particularly when you can't physically be in a room with people, to create engagement by people signing up to webinars, it means that you know they sign up and you've got their email address, so there's a GDPR kind of marketing permission thing there. So that's great, but the beauty of it is you can involve more people and more voices because you've got the visual as well. Where it doesn't quite work so well when it's audio is your brain can't process that many different voices, can it, in the same way?
I think it can be quite tricky. I think it could become just noise, or the listener doesn't know who they're listening to. So if you can kind of picture someone, again, this could be personal preference. Like if you can picture someone talking, it generally makes it, I think, it more engaging as a podcast. But if you're just kind of thinking, I don't know who that is talking, I've no idea, there's lots of interruptions, I just feel you're not part of a kind of proper conversation. It feels a little bit like noise. Yeah, I mean, that's what I'd say maybe three at a push, really.
Yeah.
But two, I think, is just a really nice, intimate interview.
To your point about the noise, is any of those things just distract from the message, the distract from the content?
And again, this is specific to agency podcasts, but I mean, again, it very much depends on what your content is. So as an interview-based podcast, I would say try and go for a host and one guest to a push, really.
Okay, so the episode length can be really flexible, and again, kind of driven by the subject matter and the format. What do you think about how many episodes should somebody commit to when they're planning? How should they approach that?
I don't think you should necessarily say that you're going to kind of say, I'm going to do 10 podcasts in a series and that's what we're going to do. I think it's worth firstly having a go and seeing how you get on with it. But it's definitely worth maybe if it's going to be over a few months, maybe just kind of banking a few episodes just in case you get busy. Maybe try and do two recordings with two different guests in one day. I probably wouldn't do more than two in one day. But also bear in mind that the first episode is always the most difficult to get down, just because you're getting used to it. Again, though, if you have a format, it's not a problem. So
and a good producer.
So I would say, I wouldn't say you definitely have to commit to six episodes, but I would say maybe get like three or four in the bank, see how they go, and then you can see what the reaction is and tweak the content from then on. It's a working process, really, much like a newsletter or any other piece of marketing focus. So
yeah, I think having something that you can build momentum with, I think, is really important, isn't it? So what else do you think that an agency needs to think about at the planning stage?
Okay, so the way I work as a producer is that I break it down into your setup, and then you've got your episodic production. So in your setup, you've got to think about your format, your frequency, who's the host, who it's aimed at, all of that as well. But I think you also need to think about your naming of the podcast. Now, just as a bit of advice, Apple Podcasts uses the title, the author, and the description fields for search as well. So kind of any metadata for your podcast, along with your artwork, can kind of affect where your podcast shows up in searches. And actually sometimes how likely users are going to subscribe to it, which is the aim here. You want to build your audience that comes back every month or every week or whenever you want to put it out. But I would say, like, also in terms of artwork, I would say hold off until you actually know what your idea is, just because it might be that it'll develop a little bit further. So that should probably be one of the last things that you do. You just then need to think about your costs. So there's a few costs involved. It's not too expensive. Recording, if you want to record in a studio, there's a bit of hosting that's involved. If you want to integrate it into your website. So just a few sort of techie things you need to have a little think about.
Sorry, just thinking about the recording for a second, because sound is really important. I'm always really conscious that it's a real privilege that people are choosing to listen to the episodes, and we try to make the sound as good as it can be, because I think, again, you know, it's another distraction if the audio isn't very good. Now, so we started off for a long time in the recording in the pod. Obviously, during lockdown, everything has been remote. And the interesting thing with that is that production values, whether it's radio, television, across the board, have all completely changed, haven't they? You know, the news on television, and you've got people dropping in and out, the signal's going, there are interviews on the radio where the signal goes, or there's a doorbell going off in the background. I don't know, do you think that the production values that certainly we started with, do you think that's sort of changed forever, or do you think everyone should still strive for the best possible audio that they can get?
I mean, I would say that nobody listens to a podcast because it has superior sound quality. But I would say that people do put up with less than optimal sound quality. But I always strive to get the best possible recording, mainly because it makes life so much easier with the edit as well, which is why I would say if you've got the money and if you've got the resources to do it, I would always use a studio. Obviously at the moment it's slightly different. I think with people who are long distance, there's some excellent online software that you can use, which is what we're using now and people have been using throughout lockdown, and I think it's really developed in leaps and bounds recently as well. But absolutely, I would always try and get the best quality sound, because I've heard some dreadful podcasts, and it, literally you listen to 5 minutes of it, and not even that, you turn it off. You've just, as you were saying, it's a privilege for people to listen to it. And I think you've got to respect that this is people's time. This is their own time that they're listening to this. I mean, previously we talked about this being something that people listen to on a commute on the way to work. It's different now. It's like people are more at home. So more than ever, I think you really do need to strive for it. But I wouldn't say it doesn't have to be perfect like a studio, but if you can get it as good as possible, then definitely always try.
Okay, so we're using Zencastr for this recording. This is what mm-hmm. we've been using all the way through lockdown, and actually any of the other remote recordings that we did even prior to lockdown. So, you know, when we were doing international recordings, we were using Zencastr.
We've also used Skype, and there's other platforms like Squadcast. There's a couple of other ones that have video attached to them as well. But I think the main thing for long distance or for international calls, making sure that you've got good Wi-Fi, making sure that you brief your guests on where they should be recording, making sure they wear headphones, which really does help with the recording. It stops a lot of feedback and background noise. And you can get some really amazing USB microphones if you really want to get into it. It's perfect for at home. They're brilliant.
And it's not hugely costly, is it?
No, it's not at all. No. I mean, you can get basic ones for like 80 quid, can't you, to begin with?
And shiny surfaces. Let's talk about shiny surfaces.
Yes.
And if we're recording from home, it's all about the cushions and throws.
It's all about that. And it's all about the home studio now.
It is. Anything to soften the sound. I get lots of questions from people asking about the editing process, mm-hmm. and we absolutely do edit our episodes. I think that's the first thing to say. And there is an extensive blooper reel, which means that, yes, you own the blooper reel. So
I do, Lucy.
You blackmail me forever and a day. But the editing process, I wonder if you can just talk a little bit about that and how important it is.
I think, as I've mentioned before, the editing should be the easy bit. And yes, we do edit our episodes, but really it's kind of just taking out some ums and some ahs and just making sure that it flows. But I would say that if you are investing in the recording, in the format, and making sure the content is what you're actually selling, then it's easy. It should be super easy from there. And then in terms of kind of, you know, software, there's free software. Audacity is a great one to get started on. So there's lots of different options out there. But again, you know, get it all done before and then the edit would be super simple.
I'm thinking what else we need to think about from the tech point of view.
Yes. So you definitely need to think about the hosting side of things as well. There's a few different platforms. We use Libsyn, which is where you upload your finished podcast, all edited and lovely, ready to go. And it creates an RSS feed and distributes it to all the different podcasting platforms. And in my opinion, Libsyn's one of the best. There's lots and lots available. Other people might say differently, but it just means you can automatically get it sent out every single episode to like Spotify, Acast, Stitcher, iTunes, wherever you want it to appear, it will be done for you. And you can set it up to kind of automatically do that for you. There is a new one actually, which I haven't, I've only used once for recording, but there's an all-in-one platform called Anchor FM or anchor.fm, which is just, you can create, distribute and potentially monetize your podcast all for free. Again, I haven't used it. I think if it's on a basic level, I think that's pretty good, but you get just so many more options on Libsyn. The more pro hosting sites, you just get excellent stats. It's definitely worth investing in that.
And of course, once you've got your content, like all marketing content, you just need to make sure that you're repurposing it and that you're sharing it and using it across your channels and having a plan and a system in place so that you know that, you know, when each episode goes live, you know how you're sharing it, you know what your plan is, you know, if there are quotes that you're going to share, if there are audio clips that mm-hmm. you want to share, and how you just over time start to build that audience.
And if you make sure that your podcast appears on as many of the platforms available, particularly making sure you've got enough kind of Android options, iTunes, Spotify. I mean, Spotify is just so huge. Anyway, just make sure you get on as many platforms as possible and share that as well. Share the options so that people aren't just broken down into Google Podcasts or iTunes. It's definitely worth mentioning that you're on Spotify and all the others as well.
Good advice.
So Lucy, tell me, we've been doing this for almost 4 years. Has it been worth it?
Do you know what? I genuinely think of all the things that I've done, it's worth saying it's the thing I love doing the most. I really enjoy it. It gives me permission to have really interesting conversations with interesting people. So I love it. I love the fact that it's started a conversation and that I get feedback from people all of the time who get in touch because they've heard something particular that either they want to carry on the conversation or they've heard something that they've then implemented into their kind of working day and it's made a real difference. It's talked to an audience about something that's addressing a pain point, which I think is why, you know, the guests that we've had and the conversations that we have resonated with the audience. And again, that's a really lovely thing. Yes, there's certainly a commercial benefit to it in that, yes, it's a commitment of time, but realistically, it's the one thing that I kind of show up to do every month in, month out. So it is a commitment. It's not a quick fix. It's certainly not a quick fix. It's not something that you can do and immediately, I would say, start seeing new introductions or new inquiries for work. But certainly over time, it's given me the opportunity to speak at many more events than I was doing before. So I get invitations to join different events and speak, which is lovely because it means I get to have those conversations in a room with people too, rather than just sort of sending a conversation out into the ether. So yes, it absolutely has been worth it. And yes, as a result of all of those things, of course, it has resulted in new work too. So yeah, I guess my advice to an agency would be think about your content strategy, think about your point of view. And if your point of view can live in an audio world, if it leads you to have the opportunity to have really interesting conversations that will be valuable to a wider audience and will help get your message and that point of view out to a wider audience, then try it. But absolutely, strategy first, content first, and format later.
Well, that's very good to know that you still like doing it.
I do, yeah, I do. So I'm going to ask you, in true Small Spark Theory style, I'd like to know the best piece of advice that you've been given.
I've kind of been saying it the whole way through, really. It's quite a well-known TV phrase in terms of that you can't fix it in the edit.
Ah, brilliant.
But this also is very, very relevant to something that you say, Lucy, all the time, which I always think of, and it's about always having a plan. So,
right.
That will be my best piece of advice. Lucy Mann.
Aww. Okay, you can stay. And which book would you recommend to our listeners?
Well, I can't talk about podcasts and then recommend a book. I think that would be ridiculous. So I'm going to choose a few different podcasts. Again, I'm not just choosing one. But from kind of an industry perspective, I think Two Bobs is always a winner. Two Bobs with Blair Enns and David C. Baker. Lovely guests of Small Spark Theory too. Definitely recommend that. Desert Island Discs, again, I'll stop banging on about it, but it's just perfect. And I have a couple more. Obviously, you know, I think Adam Buxton is always a winner as a podcast. He's one of the reasons that I suggested it to you all these years ago. And one of my other favourite interview-based podcasts is the Alec Baldwin podcast called Here's the Thing. He just has the most wide range of guests. You know, it's just wonderful. So I'd recommend listening to all of them.
Brilliant. Brilliant. I did just hear yesterday that apparently Rob Lowe now has a podcast.
Whoa. Okay. Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's news.
That's definitely news.
That's news.
What's he talking about?
I'm not sure yet. I've just subscribed. I'm about to go and listen to it now.
God, you've gone in. You've gone straight into subscription level. Straight away.
Straight away. Straight away.
I saved that for at least a couple of episodes in.
Oh, Nancy, it's because it's my age. I'll forget about it if I don't subscribe. And if it doesn't pop up in the feed, I'll forget all about it tomorrow.
Yeah. Okay.
Izzy, thank you so much for doing this and for taking the time. I know you are much, much more comfortable on mute, just listening in the background with your headphones on, than actually being on microphone. But that's hugely valuable advice. And obviously, I'm going to put your contact details on the show notes because I know that you do have availability to produce and edit podcasts. So if anybody listening to this has decided they want to give it a go, then I can highly recommend Izzy as a safe pair of hands in production and editing to send you out onto the airwaves.
Oh, thank you, Lucy. Thank you very much.
You're welcome. And hopefully I'll see you soon.
Oh, yes.
Maybe when on the other side.
Thank you very much.
You have been listening to Small Spark Theory, brought to you by Gunpowder Consulting. Join in the conversation on Twitter at GunpowderTweets using the hashtag SmallSparkTheory. This podcast is created and hosted by me, Lucy Mann, and edited and produced by Isabel Jarvis. Music is provided by JukeDeck, available at jukedeck.com. If you'd like to find out more about our online, mentored new business courses, visit smallsparktheory.com. Or for information about our consulting, visit gunpowderconsulting.com. And if you enjoyed today's episode, head to iTunes and leave us a star.